Now for agribusiness news, markets, and weather from Studio C, this is Agriculture Today.
Agricultural exports for fiscal year to date, October through July 2024, were $148.3 billion, down 3% from the same time last year.
In what has become a somewhat concerning trend of U.S. ag imports and U.S. ag exports, Mark Kenner is a USDA economist in Washington.
Agricultural imports were $171.6 billion, up 5% from this time last year, for a trade balance of negative $23.3 billion, which is $12.5 billion more negative than the $10.9 billion this time last year.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
It's probably the longest roller coaster ride that I know anyone has ever endured.
John Kavalik is president of the U.S.-Cuba Trade and Economic Council on U.S.-Cuban relations.
It has a tremendous amount of peaks and valleys. It has some great moments, some horrible moments, some very scary moments. And in my case, I'm still not off the ride. I'm proud of what the organization has done during these 30 years. We've led in a lot of areas. But there, like anything, there's some disappointments.
What's one of the biggest frustrations of the job?
The number one challenge is that I wake up every day knowing that something's going to go wrong. I don't know when, but I know it is. And I know that it's going to derail a lot of work that a lot of people have done prior to that day. And that's what's most frustrating, because this is our seventh president, that we've worked with each of them, and we've had successes in each one. But I always know that I can count on the government of Cuba to do something at some point that's going to derail those efforts and impact a tremendous amount of people, particularly those in the agricultural commodity field and the food product field. And the agricultural lobby, the farm groups and that, they've done the heavy lifting during these last 30 years. And so that's what's frustrating is I always know something bad is going to happen, and I really wish that wasn't the case.
Kavalik's biggest advice to anybody who's considering trade and Cuba: don't romanticize it.
The Biden administration has allowed for the export of vehicles into Cuba for the private sector, and that's up nearing $37 million this year alone. So there are some good stories, but as I tell everyone, you can't get trapped in the romance that is Cuba. You can't get trapped in 1959 Cuba and keep saying, well, 60 years ago, Cuba was our number one market for this or number one market of that. I'm sorry. It's 60 years later. It's different now. And so don't oversell Cuba. Don't undersell Cuba. Sell it for what it is, and it's still a successful venture to take a look at. But don't be running down there spending money just to say you went. Do homework, and there are limited opportunities, but always understand that the Cuban government is going to be your worst enemy because of the unknown. They're going to do something to make it difficult for you. You just don't know when it's coming.
It's Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
At the Farm Progress Show, I'm visiting with...
I'm Ben Gleason. I'm the Environmental Director for the Agribusiness Association of Iowa. So work on environmental issues such as pesticide use.
Well, you were just on a panel discussion here and talking on some very important topics for farmers that are out here. And I think maybe you could talk first to what are some of the concerns that they were talking to?
Yeah, the Modern Ag Alliance is kind of working on some of these concerns to maintain or protect the access to these active ingredients, whether it's from, a lawsuit or just the registration process in general, making sure that, the science is really what's guiding as far as the availability of these products and how we use them. You know, there's a registration process. It's every 7 to 9 years or whatever it is. It's basically never ending, where they're continually updating the science on, you know, how well it works on whatever it's supposed to kill or human health. Do we need to change, the personal protective equipment based on new information or just the health effects, cancer risk, et cetera. So, and a lot of our chemistries are pretty old. So we have a large volume of research, longer term studies, related to health effects.
So how does the alliance come into play and what are they able to do or accomplish?
Yeah, it's just a way to show support across 85 plus organizations that recognize the need to come together and support the science and protect the availability of these products for a wide variety of reasons. Obviously, whether it's, using glyphosate to burn down cover crops, that's an important tool. Having multiple modes of action in a tank to reduce resistance development. So all these groups just recognize that we got to stick together, and whether it's Farm Bill and asking for uniform labeling or, the FIFRA process that's in place, making sure that it stays in place and the science leads us.
So kind of looking ahead right now, what are your thoughts in terms of moving along in ways to keep consumers make consumers feel safe with the kind of food that you are producing?
Right. Yeah, it's not easy. It's not simple. I mean, most consumers don't understand where their food comes from or how it is raised. And there's certainly a lot of options out there. If someone is concerned with how it is raised, there's always organic or non-GMO or all sorts of labels out there. But, our conventionally grown food doesn't need additional labels. People just want, affordable, safe food. And frankly, we have the safest and cheapest food in the world. And part of that is because of the way we register these products and the science that's behind them.
All right, well, thank you very much for taking a couple minutes to speak with me here. We're at the Farm Progress Show. I'm Chuck Zimmerman reporting.
It's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
It's important for us to get the science right. It's important for us to have measurable results and tying those results to specific actions on the farm.
Ag Secretary Tom Vilsack.
Now, that sounds like a relatively simple process, but everybody in this building knows it depends on where you farm, depends on what you farm, depends on what your land is like from acre to acre. So, it's not easy to get that data and the quantification to a measurable and verifiable point that somebody can trust it. So that's why your RCPP program and your expansion of it and the number of producers that may be involved in it and the number of states and the number of different localities and different circumstances within those 167 counties are really important. It's why the work we're doing with the Climate Smart Agricultural Commodity Initiative in all 50 states involving over 100 commodities 198 practices doing the same thing of incenting behavior, measuring and monitoring that behavior, and then verifying the results from it, and then connecting it to, if you do this, it gives you this result. So once you've got that, then the next question is, will it be recognized? And under what framework or structure do you have to create so that it will be recognized? And who's going to be doing the recognition? So that's why we've taken $300 million from the Inflation Reduction Act, and we've set it aside, and we are essentially investing it in an effort to create protocols and standards for these ecosystem service markets to essentially utilize in judging the value of particular practices that farmers will present for credit. So we're going to try to create the protocols and standards by which this verified information can flow into and be trusted and be sort of farmer-friendly and to recognize the difference between agriculture and some other industries. Okay? And then we're also going to take time and resources to determine who out there is really in the business and can be trusted to do a good job of verification so that farmers will know here are a list of entities, organizations, companies, businesses, whatever, that you can go to and have them validate or verify what you're doing on the farm, and their validation, their verification will be recognized by the entities that will be investing in the results. So that's basically what we're doing. But it obviously depends on the continuation of the IRA, right? Yeah. It's choice to pass it, choice to fund it, choice how you use the funds, and a choice to keep it. Some people want to do away with it. Some people want to change the direction of it. So it's, I think, important for people to understand these choices, right? That's the system, and I think over the course of the next months, year or two, we're going to see a maturing of that system. And as we learn, as we get information from all these projects that are working, we verify that information, we create protocols, we create verifiers, we will create that system that ultimately will create that additional revenue stream, which I think is critically important to maintaining the small and mid-sized farming operations in this country, which I believe are critically important to rebuilding and revitalizing the rural communities, which I believe is important for our national security.
It's Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
We do. It's www.cubacouncil.org, and everything on our website is free.
Talking Ag Trade with Cuba, John Kavalik is president of the U.S.-Cuba Trade and Economic Council.
For, you know, ag interests, and, you know, that's something that, that we started to do, and we were behind the what remains to date the largest food and ag exhibition in Cuba in 2002, because basically the one bright spot, the one consistent bright spot since December of 2001, when the first agricultural commodities and food products went from the U.S. to Cuba under this TISRA law, it's about $7.5 billion in agricultural commodities and food products that have been exported from the U.S. to Cuba on a cash-only basis, because that's what the law requires. And Cuba generally ranks in the 50s of usually 220, 230 global export markets for the U.S. And that's extraordinary. And, you know, when the law was passed in 2000, there were, you know, some of the ag groups were critical, were critics, because they said, hey, cash only will mean we can't give payment terms. Banks can't finance for Cuba. We're going to sell less. And the companies, the exporters themselves, through the council, were very clear. And they said, look, no matter how well-intentioned Cuba is, because of its chosen commercial, economic, and political policies, It's chronically late in paying everyone, even with the best of intentions. So at some point, if we allow payment terms or financing, they're going to default. And no U.S. CEO wants to go on CNBC and be asked the question, why did you, you know, finance $25 million in exports to Cuba and now they've defaulted? So what the company said is, look, we'd rather have John be able to go on television and radio and in print and say, Cuba is the safest export market in the world for U.S. companies, which is true because it's all cash. But that $7.5 billion, it's a massive number, and it's a great number. So, you know, the ag data is something that we do every month, and we've been doing it every month since December of 2001 when the first rice and corn went down, and poultry went to Cuba. And, you know, we find that the ag interests they use that data. So that's, you know, our website, we have the Economic Eye in Cuba, which is, basically just gives a lot of what's happening. Of course, in the last 2 years, the most momentous change was by the Biden administration allowing the first license for the direct investment and direct financing into a Cuban private company. And this was a huge change. And of course, we still wait for the Cubans to issue the regulations allowing the money to go in. So, you know, I'm looking to put a bag over my head. You know, it's just so astonishing.
It's Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
At Farm Progress Show, I'm visiting with Kevin Ross. And Kevin, for folks that don't know, tell us a little bit about yourself and your operation.
Yeah, Chuck, from southwest Iowa. Underwood is hometown, Underwood, Minden area. Minden had all the fun tornadoes this spring, so that's home for me, right outside Council Bluffs, Omaha. We farm down there, corn, soybeans, cattle, and do some work in the biofuels industry as well on a couple of boards in ethanol and biodiesel, and former president of the National Corn Growers Association.
Well, it's good to talk to you here, and you were on a panel.
Well, I think, you know, first of all, the goal behind some of this is to make sure that, you know, the broader goal is to make sure that farmers have access to crop protection tools, and that's a basic, you know, side of behind this. But it also, you know, it ties back to the fact that you don't want state to be putting out multiple labels for the same product. When EPA has a job to do, they've got a label that they're supposed to do, and then they are also the ones in charge of deeming something safe and how to utilize it. And so they've done that. It's just that some states are not respecting that, and the EPA really needs to enforce that side of it.
Well, I understand how important those labels are, and like you said, I mean, if could something possibly, you know, say something that in this state or not in that state, and that kind of would get to be a mess, I would think.
Yeah, and I think, you know, from my personal perspective, I think it actually opens the door for more types of litigation. And that's, you know, not been stated to me necessarily, but that's what I think it's kind of trying to preempt the issues that can arise from that. So anytime you make labels more confusing, I think you, you know, in this particular situation, you're creating more issues and things to potentially litigate on, and honestly, the litigation that's been out there and the amount of cost that a company like Bayer or other ones that have been through similar situations on different products that they endure, those costs are then sent to the farmer. And again, if it's not a, you know, in this case, glyphosate has never been one legitimized case, you know, of cancer caused by glyphosate. And so that's what's very, very frustrating from a consumer standpoint, from an ag retail, from a farm standpoint, and again, from my perspective and why I, you know, think that the involvement in the Modern Ag Alliance is really it's a key advocacy group trying to move these, you know, types of issues forward.
I wasn't there for the full panel. Did you discuss ways that an organization like the Alliance, can they make a difference? Can they help with this issue?
Well, you hope so, and that's, you know, a lot of my past work, obviously, and is in association work, and you create different alliances to try to certainly, you know, speak more broadly to more people, and you do it with, you know, like-minded businesses, people, things like that. And so as you look at a broad alliance, in this case, 80-some different groups, you know, whether it's commodity groups or businesses and things like that, and it could be much broader than that, and I think, you know, not too far down the road. But as you look at those types of groups moving forward, yeah, you think that, I mean, you wouldn't be doing it if you didn't think you could make a difference. And this is just one tool to do that. Obviously, they're fighting back in other litigious ways as well, trying to make sure that you know, that lawyers are fighting other lawyers, but those things cost a lot of big money too, and these types of things are really more grassroots driven, and I think that's what a lot of farmers understand too.
So again, from Farm Progress Show, I'm Chuck Zimmerman reporting.
It's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
Every agency has its own portfolio. Our portfolio, basically, in terms of direct support for the industry, are utilizing resources to expand access to E15.
Ag Secretary Tom Vilsack.
So that's why we did the infrastructure program and why we sought expansion of it in the Inflation Reduction Act and why we are continuing to make announcements, as unfortunately we'll make in Minnesota tomorrow, to increase the number of grantees. You're going to continue to see that. So that's a direct way of helping. The other way is to be the voice in the room. All right, so the way this works, when Treasury makes guidance, they don't just make it on their own. They actually engage in what is called an interagency effort, and they bring in all of the agencies that have a piece of the action, and they say, what should we do? How should we think about this? And everybody brings in their own sort of a focus and bias. Right, transportation has one focus, energy has one focus, EPA has one focus, we have one focus. We're the voice of the farmer, if you will, in that room. So to the extent that we're the best informed, to the extent that we have concrete data, we have concrete examples, we have an indication of acceptance by farmers of the notion that, yes, climate smart does matter. Climate smart is going to help my soil. It's going to improve my productivity over time. And I've got data where I have experience to prove it. To the extent that I have and we have that kind of information going into that room, then we can be far more persuasive. Why? Because when we go into that room, we're the expert. All right? And they basically have to defer to us if our science is weak. If we don't have examples, if we don't see farmers embracing this, then it's harder to make the case, right? So to the extent that as you're collecting data and information from this project, which is really important, as we're collecting data and information from the Climate Smart Commodity Initiative companion effort, collecting that data, assembling that data, and then using it to make the case, really, really important, number one. Number two, you have relationships with land-grant universities. Land-grant universities have access to data and information. Land-grant universities are considered to be experts in this field. They need to lend their voice on behalf of the industry and on behalf of farmers. That's a voice that that is a bit nonpartisan, if you will. They obviously support all the industries. So to the extent that they are perceived to be sort of an honest broker, they can be powerful. So encouraging them to reach out, to let other agencies know about the importance of this, because they have connections with all those agencies, right? And then third, you have capacity and connections with local and state officials. And it's important for them to engage in this effort and for them to communicate to the White House, to the Treasury Department, to the Transportation Department, to whatever department they have a relationship, that they're supportive of this. And you can encourage them to do so. And if you do all of that, and then it strengthens our hand, and we come out of that interagency process with a guidance that basically, in our view, the goal here is to create more flexibility, more options, more choices for farmers to participate. We've crossed the threshold. They now recognize that ag's got to be part of the equation, part of the solution. Now the question is, to what extent?
It's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
The Agriculture Department's new farm income forecast for this year is calling for a drop in farm profits of about 7%. USDA's chief economist Seth Meyer says cash receipts from the sale of farm commodities are expected to be down about 2%. That decline
is led by crops. And so I think we can distinguish in this forecast the fortunes of crops versus livestock. And some of the revisions that were made in the 2024 forecast reflect an update in those commodity prices from where we were in February. And in a general sense, a decline in crop prices from the prior estimate in February and an increase in some of the key livestock components from that same period.
USDA is forecasting that cash receipts for crops will drop by about 10%. Sales of livestock and animal products will be up by 7%. Gary Crawford, Washington.